Your readers are Karen Edwards and Tom Bolton. We will begin our second hour of news from the News and Observer, from the New Bern Sun Journal, the Greenville Daily Reflector, and the Wilmington Star News. But we begin with the all-important TV listings for this night.
ABC will start with Celebrity Wheel of Fortune at 8 o'clock, Jeopardy Masters at 9, and Jeopardy Quarterfinals at 10. CBS, 8 o'clock, Survivor, Coconut Etiquette, and 9:30, The Amazing Race, Up the River Without a Joust. On Fox, 8 o'clock is The Masked Singer, and 10 o'clock is WRAL's 10 p.m. news on Fox 50. NBC, Chicago Med at 8, The Invisible Hand, Chicago Fire at 9, Cut Me Open, and at 10, Chicago PD, Black Ice. ION, Blue Bloods, at 8 on Dangerous Ground, Blue Bloods at 9, and Blue Bloods at 10. On PBS, 8 o'clock is Nature, Hummingbirds of Hollywood. 9 o'clock is Nova. And 10 o'clock is Bugs That Rule the World. On MNT, 8 o'clock is Dateline. 9 o'clock is Dateline, and 10 o'clock is Dateline. On CW, 8 o'clock is Wild Cards, 9 o'clock is Sherlock and Daughter, and 10 o'clock is the National News Desk, and also at 10:30. On A&E, 8 o'clock is Stadium Lockup, 9 o'clock is also Stadium Lockup, another episode, and 10 o'clock is Booked, First Day in Down in Flames. AMC, and starting at 7, we have Gran Torino, and then starting at 9:30, we have Moneyball. Let's see. The Disney Channel on 8 is Big City Greens, and 9 at 8 and 8:30. And then at 9 is Stu Go, and 9:30 is Kiff. 10 o'clock is Zombies, and 10:30 is Miraculous Ladybug. The Discovery Channel, 8 o'clock is Expedition Files, Family Secrets. Another episode of that, Identity Crisis, at 9. And Ghost at 10. ESPN, we have NHL hockey, second round, starting at 7, and then another episode or another showing starting at 9:30. We have Nickelodeon at 8. Is Friends to, well, actually, we have 6 episodes of Friends.
Friends all night long.
All night long. TMC is The Girls at 8, and Purple Noon starting at 10. TNT, excuse me, we have basketball, NBA basketball, this starts at 7:30, and then another showing starts at 10. And in USA, at 8 o'clock, Creed 3. And then at 10:30, Mission Impossible begins. Tom?
Thank you. We have several announcements for this day. We'll start with one that's from a long time back. Tactile tours are available at the North Carolina Museum of Art. These tours are designed for visitors who are blind or have low vision. These docent-led tours explore the museum's collection through audio description, tactile experiences, and by engaging the senses. Tours are available by request only. You must arrange them at least 2 weeks in advance. To schedule a tactile tour, please contact Accessibility Coordinator Molly Hull, H-U-L-L, at mhull@ncartmuseum.org or call Molly Hull at 919-664-6854. Again, Molly Hull's phone number for the tactile tours of the Museum of Art, 919-664-6854. This next one is local plays with audio description. There is one in Raleigh on Sunday, May 11th. It's called Schoolhouse Rock Live Junior at 3 p.m. at the Raleigh Little Theater at 301 Pogue Street, Raleigh. You get free ticket for your driver, so be sure to ask. The phone number to get tickets for Schoolhouse Rock Live Junior Sunday, May 11th is 919-821-3111. Again, that's 919-821-3111. And in Greensboro on Saturday, May 10th, is Back to the Future. This will be at 2 p.m. And then on Sunday again, Sunday, May 11th, Back to the Future at 1 p.m. Both shows are at Tanger Center, 300 North Elm Street in Greensboro. For the Back to the Future shows on Saturday and Sunday, the phone number is 336-333-6500. Again, the phone number for Greensboro, Back to the Future, Saturday and Sunday, the 10th and 11th, 336-333-6500. And these are plays with an audio description of what's going on. Affordable and accessible housing. Know your rights. Join the Triangle Disability Awareness Council for a seminar about affordable and accessible housing and the rights of people with disabilities. This seminar is for tenants as well as landlords and housing providers and will be held in person and on Zoom. Speaker Michael Mansett, who is the lead attorney for the Fair Housing Project Legal Aid of North Carolina, will cover affordable and accessible housing, homeownership, and rental, landlord and tenant rights, and reasonable accommodation versus modification. There will be plenty of time for questions and answers. The event will be held May 7th. That's today. Yes, that's today. And it occurs from 11 p.m., so it starts in just a few minutes, 11 a.m. till 3 p.m. in person in Chapel Hill at 2501 Homestead Road, room 109, and on Zoom. So if you want to register quickly, you can still get in on the Zoom. Now, their registration email address is next to impossible. For more information, you can call them at 919-245-4337. Again, their phone number is 919-245-4337. Or you can visit their website at www.triangledac.org. That's www.triangledac.org. Reasonable accommodations upon request. I'm going to try to give you the registration spot. I suspect you could get there by just going to the simple website, www.triangledac.org. Excuse me. But the long registration line is the https://// www.triangledac.org. /DAC event /affordable-and-accessible-housing/. One more time. https://// www.triangledac.org/DAC event /affordable-and-accessible-housing. call the number if you need help with that, 919-245-4337. 919-245-4337. But be aware, this is happening today. It starts at 11 o'clock, 20 minutes from now. So if you're interested, you got to act now on that one. Okay. This is from Disability Rights North Carolina. Our work is threatened. Can we count on you so our community can continue to count on us? Did you know this year marks the 50th anniversary of the Protection and Advocacy PNA Network? As North Carolina's designated PNA, Protection and Advocacy Network, Disability Rights North Carolina has proudly carried out our federally mandated mission, protecting and advocating for the rights of people with disabilities across our state. Funding cuts threaten the services and protections we provide to individuals with disabilities and those who love and care for them. This isn't just a budget line. This is about real people losing access to education, health care, safe housing, and the support they need to live with dignity and independence. We are proud of what we've accomplished, but we cannot continue this work without your support. We urge you to act now to protect the rights and safety of disabled North Carolinians. Together, we built something powerful over the last 50 years. Let's make sure it lasts for the next 50 and beyond. To find out how you can help, please go to https://disabilitierightsnc.org/take-action. Again, that's https://disabilitierightsnc.org/take-action-. I have a real problem with these impossible websites that we're trying to share on the radio and in print and all. You would think they would make them easier. This is an easier one. Have you gotten your free currency reader yet? The Department of the Treasury's Bureau of Engraving and Printing is now providing a free currency reader to all eligible blind or visually impaired individuals. The device is small, compact, and runs on a AAA battery, which is included. To use the currency reader, simply insert a U.S. bill into the reader and press the button. The device will tell the note's denomination. To request your currency reader, fill out an application form, which is available to download at www.bep.gov. That's all. That's it. www.bep.gov. The BEP stands for Bureau Engraving Printing. It must be signed by a competent authority, such as a doctor, who can certify your eligibility. Then simply mail it to the address on the application. Once your application is verified, a reader will be mailed to you at no charge. For more information about the U.S. Currency Reader Program, please visit www.bep.gov or call toll-free 844-815-9388. Again, that number is 844-815-9388. You are listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, connecting people who are blind and print impaired to each other, their families, and communities by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. In addition to using specially tuned sub-channel radio receivers, NCRS streams our programming on our website at ncreadingservice.org. Listen by using the Listen Live streaming audio player located at the upper right-hand corner of our website pages at ncreadingservice.org. If you have an assistive technology device such as an Alexa or Google Home, just say, "Tune in NC Reading Service," and you will listen instantly. That's Tune in NC Reading Service. We also provide podcasts of over 50 magazines and other information and entertainment programs following the initial broadcast. Please visit our website, ncreadingservice.org, and click on Skip to Podcast section. For more information about the North Carolina Reading Service, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our phone number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you so much for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. We appreciate it a lot. And now we're going to go down east for a few articles.
Let's start with the community news from the Greenville Daily Reflector. The Winterville Chamber of Commerce will hold a lunch breakout at 12:30 p.m. on Thursday at Chick-fil-A, 4239 Winterville Parkway. Take a break from the office and network while supporting a local restaurant. A Season of Hope, a benefit for Building Hope Community Life Center, will be held at 6:30 p.m. Thursday at Rock Springs Center, that's 4025 NC 43 North. The event will feature former NFL player Clifford J. Wilson and former Major League Baseball star Daryl Strawberry. Individual tickets are $75. Visit Building Open NC. Excuse me, that's buildinghopenc.org/banquet.
Seeing Daryl Strawberry is worth the money.
Yeah.
I remember watching him play, quite a baseball player.
Okay.
Sorry.
No good. Pitt County Animal Services, in partnership with the City of Greenville APS, will offer a low-cut rabies vaccination clinic for dogs and cats from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday at the Stanton House Fire and Rescue, 2501 North Memorial Drive. The clinic will offer $5 rabies vaccinations for the first 500 pets. A limited number of microchips will also be available at a cost of $10 per chip. No appointment is needed. For more information, visit pittcountync.gov/rabies clinic, or you can call Pitt County Animal Services at 902-1725. Worth Products will present the inaugural Ram Fest from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday at the Greene County Sports Complex, 342 U.S. 13 Snow Hill. The festival will celebrate the tradition of the Greene Central High School Rams mascot and feature shows, live entertainment, children's activities, and the Elder Abuse Awareness Walk. For information, see Greene, that's G-R-E-E-N-E, countync.gov/Ram Fest. The Friends of Joyner Library's annual banquet and reception will be held at 5 p.m. on Tuesday in the Janice Hardison Faulkner Gallery on the second floor of Joyner Library at East Carolina University, 1000 East 5th Street. Margaret Bauer will speak about Paul Greene, More Than the Lost Colony. The event is free and open to the public. You can contact Charlotte Fitz Daniels at 328-0287 or FITZDanielsC16@ecu.edu. The Cypress Group of the North Carolina Sierra Club will hold its monthly meeting at 7 p.m. on Tuesday at TAPT, 650 East Fire Tower Road. The topic will be biodiversity globally and regionally, what we can do and are doing in Greenville, with guest speaker Jeff McKinnon, ECU Department of Biology professor, and Greenville's Environmental Advisory Committee chair. The public is welcome to attend. Admission is free. For more information, contact Mary Altsenzer at MALSENTZER at rsnet.org. The Eastern Carolina Village and Farm Museum at 4570 County Home Road will present a day-long celebration of trades and skills of the 1800s from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on May 17th. 30 costumed interpreters will demonstrate farm life activities like blacksmithing, woodworking, spinning, weaving, candle and soap making, outdoor cooking, and more. Ideal for families. Tickets sold at the gate, $10 for ages 12 and over, $5 for ages 6 to 11, 5 and under are free. Rain or shine. For more information, email ecvafm@gmail.com. Cooper's Cup, 2588 Railroad Street, Winterville, will host an adoption event from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on May 17th for Pit Friends. Pit Friends will receive 10% of proceeds and have adoptable dogs to meet at the event. And finally, the Carolina Chorus Connection Barbershop Chorus will present its annual show at 3 p.m. on May 17th at First Christian Church, 2810 East 14th Street. The program also features two professional men's quartets, Let's Sing and Harmony Grits, and a female trio, Gazebo Gals. Donations are accepted at the door or at carolinachordconnection.com.
There's a lot happening down in Greenville and surrounding areas.
There is.
Sounds exciting. Pitt County officials have recommended a $414.7 million spending plan that outpaces the 2024 and 25 plan by about $17 million, but holds the county's property tax rate steady at 56.63 cents per hundred. The budget, as presented to the Board of Commissioners on Monday, includes a 3% cost of living adjustment for county staff, along with merit pay increases ranging from 1.2 to 2.4%, totaling a possible 5.4% raise for some employees. It also included a 2% increase for local school staff whose salaries are not paid by the state, which was less than the school system's 5% request. Staff recommends adding 9 new positions, fewer than the 19 requested by various departments. Pitt County Manager Janice Gallagher said the plan embraces a conservative but optimistic outlook for the coming year. Key uncertainties include a potential drop in interest rates, stagnant sales tax revenue, and unknown projections for federal funding. County Manager Gallagher said that 4 years ago, the county budgeted $100,000 in interest income on its savings. This year, the county budgeted $4 million. Staff predicts that the upward trend experienced over the past 4 years will level out or potentially dip. Gallagher was also optimistic that the budget could function with the current tax rate, which was a 12-cent reduction from the 2023-24 rate. A four-year property revaluation allowed the county to reduce the rate without affecting revenues. Despite the cut, the rate was still 4.56 cents higher. Let me say 4.56 cents higher than the revenue neutral rate of 52.07 cents per $100 valuation, meaning that most real property owners did see an increase in their taxes because property values grew by about 36%. That would have been a year before this. The proposed budget also includes funds for construction of a crosswalk with flashing beacons across Four Lines Road, leading from a residential area to South Central High School. Gallagher said that the State Department of Transportation has offered to pay for the beacons, which leaves $192,000 in costs for the rest of the project. Staff recommends the county spend $150,000 on the project, leaving $42,000 in the remainder. Gallagher said that the town of Winterville has offered to contribute to the project as well. A timeline is uncertain. Other notable expenses included in this year's budget are $5 million in architecture and design for a new county administration building and funding for software upgrades across departments. The Pitt County Sheriff's Office would receive $152,000 to implement new software at its communications center and also receive funding for a new fire alarm system at the Pitt County Detention Center. The budget's top spending area is education at about $84.5 million. About $72.5 million goes to public safety, $59.5 million to human services, and $56.7 million to general government. Education accounts for just over 20% of the budget's total, Gallagher said. The number requested was even higher. Pitt County Schools asked for about $61.9 million and is recommended to receive $54.3 million in the proposed budget. That is an increase of about $3 million over last year's budget for education. The budget also recommended a $7.3 million be allotted toward Pitt Community College, close to the $7.4 million the college requested. However, the college also asked for roughly $59.5 million for one-time capital project costs. The budget instead includes about $4.2 million for one-time project expenses, which staff further recommends the college spend on fire alarm upgrades, renovations at the Gulf Student Center, equipment for the college's new welding building, and ventilation fan renovations at the Williams Building. The college's large one-time capital funding request included legitimate roofing needs, the county manager Gallagher said. Schools and other county agencies have their chance to state their case to commissioners during a series of budget workshops set to run through Thursday. Commissioners have scheduled a public hearing on the budget for June 3rd and could adopt it at that time. A budget must be adopted by June 30th, according to state law. This was written by Pat Gruner for the Greenville Reflector.
Let's move on to the New Bern Sun Journal. Saturday marks the 32nd anniversary of the National Association of Letter Carriers Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive, and the New Bern branch is preparing to do its part. The National Association of Letter Carriers is a nonprofit union for the letter carriers that work at the post office. Each year, on the second Saturday in May, the letter carriers and rural carriers across the country collect non-perishable food donations from customers, explained Jason Cobbs, local branch 780 food drive coordinator. Craven County residents who would like to participate can leave non-perishable food donations by their mailbox or front door Saturday for collection. Any residents who wish to volunteer or be a driver to help pick up food Saturday can contact Cobbs at jbirdcobbs, C-O-B-B-S, at yahoo.com or call Religious Community Services at 252-633-2767. Cobbs said area donations will remain in the community. Donations will be sent to Religious Community Services at 919 George Street in New Bern. Religious Community Services is a faith-based organization that aims to address the basic needs of the community by providing food, clothing, and shelter to those who need it most. The organization serves Craven, Jones, and Pamlico counties. Since its inception, the drive has collected 2 billion pounds of food nationwide, Cobbs said. He also explained that the need for food donations is great, stating that more than 42 million Americans are unsure where their next meal will come from. Our food drive is crucial because most food banks and pantries really receive most of their donations around Thanksgiving and Christmas, he said. By the time spring and summer come, the supplies are low.
Two Beaufort residents transformed the former Mount Olive University building in Washington into a new destination for shopping and entrepreneurial growth. In partnership with the Beaufort County Community College Small Business Center, William Caton and his daughter Elizabeth Penhollow held the grand opening of the Beaufort Marketplace Saturday. Beaufort Marketplace offers a unique opportunity for both startups and established businesses to thrive in a supportive, resource-rich environment. The 18,000-square-foot facility features small vignettes, shelves, walls, and private rooms available for lease, providing a setting for entrepreneurs, artists, and artisans to showcase their work and grow their businesses. Caton, a real estate agent with Maple Crossing, said the building was packed for the grand opening with 67 vendors selling items. Caton said that the new retail and business hub is designed to foster small business success and attract visitors to the area. It's an incubator for people who wish to start a business, Caton said, quoting him. They can set up a small space, see if their business works, and if it works, we'll help them expand and get into another building. Vendors at the Beaufort Marketplace must pay to lease a space, but Beaufort Community College will sponsor free seminars, Caton said. The complex will host small business classes in a dedicated classroom, offering training in entrepreneurship, sales, and marketing. Additionally, private office spaces will be available for those in need of a professional setting to conduct business operations. The vendor agreement includes services such as sales assistance, marketing support, bookkeeping, and product display arrangements. Additionally, vendors have access to real-time sales tracking through an advanced electronic system. Beaufort Marketplace also provides a professional sales staff and services to support their businesses. We hope that this will become a go-to place for Washington, North Carolina, and also an incubator for growing small businesses, Caton said. Caton said that the facility is designed for convenience and security. It features surveillance cameras, 200 well-lit parking spaces, and a prime location along a high-traffic corridor with 20,000 cars passing daily. Caton and Penhall, an insurance agent with NC Farm Bureau Insurance Group's Washington office, have a vision for continued expansion of this Beaufort Marketplace. Caton said the goal for future phases is to expand the facility by 22,000 square feet, ultimately creating a dynamic 40,000 square foot space dedicated to innovation and to commerce. Additionally, Caton and Penhall are working with a new packaging and shipping company in Washington, Global Transports, to offer worldwide shipping for vendors. We don't know whether we can do it because we're so small, Caton said, but we're hoping that we can get Global Transports to work with us like we're working with the community so these people can also sell online and ship, just like Shopify or Amazon. Visitors of the Beaufort Marketplace will find a diverse array of offerings, from unique gifts to health-conscious products, making it an ideal shopping destination for all occasions. It's located at 4525 U.S. 264 West in Washington. The Beaufort Marketplace will be open for shopping Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. For more information about leasing opportunities, upcoming events, or just for general information, please call 252-623-1030. The phone number is 252-623-1030. And this was written by Karamia Valentine for the New Bern Sun Journal. On to Wilmington.
On to Wilmington. This article is by Renee Spencer. This Wilmington Veterans Organization highlights flags, scholarship, and youth sports. It's how the Wilmington NC 40 and 8 Voiture is making a difference. The room is crowded with children, excited about a presentation at school. They turn their attention to the men standing at the front. The men are members of the 40 and 8 Voiture Local 245 based in Wilmington, and they've come to teach the children about the American flag, its history, its significance, and the etiquette surrounding its care. The enthusiasm of the children is electrifying, says Rick Sessa, Chef de Guerre Pass with Voiture Local 245. They are so involved and so engaged. When you ask them questions, all the hands go up. Called Flags for First Graders, this is just one of the programs the local Voiture does. Founded in 1920, the 40 and 8 began as an elite honor society for the American Legion. But it became its own independent veterans organization in 1960. The organization's name comes from the French Army box cars used in World War I. The cars were marked with 40 ohms, 8 chevaux on the side, meaning they had the transport capacity of 40 men or 8 horses. According to the organization's website, the mode of travel was extremely uncomfortable, and the name was a lighthearted symbol of the deeper service, unspoken horrors, and shared sacrifices that bind all who have endured combat. Membership is by invitation only, and the Wilmington local, which has about 50 members, draws from New Hanover, Brunswick, Pender, Onslow, and Columbus counties. The group is very active in the community with programs for youths, nurses, and veterans. We're one of the more active units in the state of North Carolina, and I think it has to do with the enthusiasm we have for our programs and the leadership, Sessa said. He also noted the focus on nurses has historically been one of the organization's missions, and it also has roots to World War I, when men sustained significant injuries resulting from combat and their time in the trenches. As a result, Voiture 245 gives scholarships to those enrolled in local nursing programs. The thing I'm most proud of is our Voiture has 3 endowments for the 3 local colleges, Cape Fear Community College, UNC Wilmington, and Brunswick Community College, Sessa said. He explained that 4th of July, he saw first-handed how the funds helped nurses succeed with their education when he had to be treated for dehydration at the emergency room at Novant Health Brunswick Medical Center. The nurse caring for him was wearing the 40 and 8 pin, identifying her as a scholarship recipient. Other programs include hosting clinics for young athletes, sending Boy Scouts to camp, contributing to Veterans Services and Veterans Affairs programs, including the Purple Heart Dinner, and providing refreshments to the VA hospitals in Brunswick and New Hanover counties. We have members from all branches, except Space Force, and that's because most of us are of an age when Space Force was non-existent, Sessa said with a chuckle. To learn more about the 40 and 8, visit the organization's website at www.40and8.org.
The Sunset Road wildfire in Boiling Springs Lake has been ablaze for nearly 5 days, but the community continues to show its support. A small woods fire that began around Barclay Road in Boiling Springs Lake on Friday, May 2nd, has burned more than 1,300 acres as of yesterday, Tuesday, May 6th. As of midday Tuesday, it was 15% contained. As work to extinguish the blaze continues, here's how the Boiling Springs Lake community has pitched in to help. First of all, a local father-daughter duo took part in the firefighting efforts. On a surprise journey, Brunswick County School Board of Election Chairman and Village of Baldhead Island Public Safety Lieutenant Stephen Barger and his daughter Zoe ended up on a 6-person fire engine. Zoe is a 15-year-old junior firefighter at Clarkton Volunteer Fire Department. The Clarkton Volunteer Fire Department was called in to assist with the wildfire, and Zoe Barger, through special permission, had the opportunity to work with a team comprised of Boiling Spring Lakes and Baldhead Island firefighters for 10 hours next to her dad. The pair said their team embraced Zoe, noting she even got to talk with a female firefighter from Wilmington. It was a good experience to be able to do that with Dad and the team I was with, Zoe said. Their team worked together to protect a farm and keep the fire from spreading to the radio tower and water tower located on North Carolina 87. Steve Barger said he has always been proud of his daughter, but was not prepared to work with his daughter under intense circumstances. It was a super rewarding experience for me to serve my community and watch my daughter serve this community. It's just an experience I never thought I was going to be able to have, Steve Barger said. With a wildfire still burning in Brunswick County, here's what to know. That was something that wasn't really included in this article. Excuse me. Going on. Boiling Springs Lake Fire Rescue is a volunteer fire department, and a new GoFundMe has been created to replace the volunteers' worn-out suits. As the wildfire continues to burn, Gracie Price created a GoFundMe titled Help Equip Our Heroes, Support the Boiling Springs Fikes Fire Department, to make sure the squad is well-equipped to handle another fire. She said their equipment is worn and in desperate need of replacement. After a fire like that, they need it now more than ever. These firefighters answered the call without hesitation. It's time for us to answer theirs, the GoFundMe site says. Donations per the website will go toward purchasing new gear and essential firefighting equipment like turnout gear and breathing apparatus. Boiling Springs Lake Fire Rescue put out a Facebook post stating they have good gear that meet all safety specifications and that not all their gear is outdated. However, as the city continues to grow, the rescue team's need for gear and equipment for volunteers has also risen. The goal is to raise $20,000. As of yesterday, May 6, only $700 had been raised. The North Carolina Forest Service does continue to provide updates on the wildfire, and they will still be fighting for a few more days at least. This article, written by Savannah Tenahanoff, was for the Wilmington Star News. And now we'll move back to Raleigh paper and some Raleigh News and Observer articles.
Okay. A popular LGBTQ bar in downtown Raleigh has permanently closed after 10 years. This article is by Renee Umstead. Ruby Deluxe, which was located on South Salisbury Street, announced the news in a social media post Friday, May 2nd. Thank you so very much for letting us serve and entertain you for the last 10 years, the post read. This Saturday's Glitter Hour will be Ruby Deluxe's last night. Glitter Hour isn't done, though. Keep an eye out. The people who owned Ruby Deluxe also have a stake in two other downtown Raleigh venues, the Wicked Witch and the Knight Rider, which do remain open. Ruby Deluxe has been posting about its financial struggles for months. In November, Ruby Deluxe shared on Instagram that it was, quote, in big trouble, and asked people to donate or attend its Save the Queer Bar party. The reality is rent is steep and bills are ever increasing, and the capitalist society we live in is not built for businesses that prioritize people and ethical operations, Ruby Deluxe wrote in the November Instagram post. We do our best to price accessibly for queer and medium to low income folks, but the cost of running a business in Raleigh is made for upper income folks. According to the bar's Instagram post, Ruby Deluxe had to close the weekend after Halloween because the sewer line collapsed, which caused it to lose out on revenue for a time. Ruby Deluxe set a fundraising goal of $10,000, which it said would help cover costs of things like rent, bills, and staff wages. Representatives of the bar said none of the funds would go to Ruby Deluxe ownership. As of December, Ruby Deluxe reported that it had raised $8,472. Tim Limmel, who owned Ruby Deluxe, made the news in June 2020 after a confrontation with Wake County Sheriff's deputies. The officers used less lethal force against Limmel and some of his friends who were outside the South Salisbury Street bar handing out water bottles and granola bars to people protesting police brutality.
Wake County teachers are being asked to take smaller local raises in order to to help avoid raising dental costs for all employees. The state board approved a budget, the school board of Wake County approved a budget proposal on Tuesday that asked the Wake County Board of Commissioners for a $40.3 million increase in local funding for the 2025-26 school year. The school board wanted to avoid asking for a $60 million increase, so the budget includes reducing teacher raises, changing school thermostat settings, and cutting positions. The budget was approved by a 6-3 vote. Board members Cheryl Caulfield, Christina Gordon, and Wing Nin were the dissenting votes. Gordon said, "I cannot support or agree to a budget that has this many cuts." The budget was approved over the objections of school employees who had urged the school board not to send commissioners a budget with cuts in positions. "A budget is not a wish list," said school board chair Chris Hegarty. "It's a detailed plan for how you spend the money you expect to receive, and that can be very, very difficult." He went on to say, "With inadequate state funding and limited county funding, we have to be realistic and responsible about how to plan to spend the funds that we expect we will receive." The Democratic majority on the school board blamed the Republican-controlled state legislature for not providing enough money for public schools to avoid budget cuts. Board members complained about how the state has increased funding for private school vouchers instead. Tyler Swanson, school board vice chair, said, "The General Assembly must and can and should do better as it relates to public education, because public education is a public good that all of us deserve." The school board is asking commissioners to provide $742.9 million of its $2.3 billion operating budget. All the school board's budget cutting might not be enough, though. On Monday, Wake County Manager David Ellison recommended a $35 million increase in schools funding, $5.3 million less than the school board's request. Commissioners will vote on their budget in June. "I'm really hopeful they'll get to $40 million by their June vote," said school board member Sam Hershey. Hegarty said fully funding the $40.3 million increase is a reasonable and responsible ask. "We know that property taxes are a burden," Hegarty said, "but we also know that we are asking for the minimum amount needed to keep our schools operating and to take care of our students." School administrators have identified $60 million in needs this year. In March, Superintendent Robert Taylor proposed a budget that included $18.7 million in budget cuts called strategic repurposing. Originally, the cuts included reducing maintenance spending by $600,000 and saving $2.5 million by eliminating employer contributions to employee dental insurance. The dental changes would have impacted 16,000 employees by costing them $336 each year. The board asked staff to come up with alternative cuts to restore the maintenance spending and the employer dental contributions. One of the alternative cuts approved by the board is to give teachers a 1.5% increase in the local salary supplement instead of the proposed 3% increase. Wake uses local dollars to supplement the base salaries for teachers paid for by the state. Dipping into teacher raises to cover dental costs will help non-teachers, especially the lower-paid staff. But school administrators were unable to answer the News and Observer's questions on how much it would impact teachers financially to take smaller raises to avoid raising dental costs. "There is no way that I feel justified in allowing their supplement to be sacrificed to get the resources in the classroom," Caulfield said. Another alternative cut approved by the board is to change school thermostat settings 1 degree higher and 1 degree lower. Now schools will range from 69 degrees to 74 degrees when the HVAC system is functioning normally. The board also agreed to put $763,701 from the funds used by groups to rent school facilities. Those three items will allow Wake to cover the dental and maintenance items and avoid a $1 million reduction to the Restart Schools program, which helps schools that are continuing low performing. Let me just have a second here. There were some other cuts, such as eliminating building substitute program, where a full-time employee is assigned to each school to fill in for absent teachers. Now they will contact substitute teachers as they need them to see if they're available. Eliminate a secretary position in each high school. Reduce the number of high school assistant principals by changing the funding formula. Reduce the number of counselors and social workers by changing the funding formula. Eliminate vacant school nurse positions and reduce spending on instructional supplies, $5 per student. This budget will now go to the county commissioners. We'll see in June how they handle that.
Parking in downtown Raleigh to get more expensive for visitors and state employees. This is a lengthy article. We won't have time for all of it, but I hope to give you the gist of it. Rates are going up for state employees who drive to work, and they'll lose their reserve spots, too. Beyond the thousands of state employees impacted, visitors who park for free in state government lots in the evenings and on weekends will start being charged after hours, not just during the business day. More parking lots will be open to the public. Downtown Raleigh draws thousands of visitors on weekdays for big events like festivals and parades. The change is coming this summer after being voted on by the Council of State on Tuesday. The only member of the Council of State, made up of 10 statewide elected officials, including the governor, to vote against any of the changes was Republican Labor Commissioner Luke Farley. All 10 Council of State members are the top bosses of thousands of state employees. The changes are effective July 1st. The Department of Administration, which is under Democratic Governor Josh Stein's administration, requested the changes, citing efficiency initiatives. Mark Edwards, the agency's chief deputy secretary, told the Council of State it would contribute to DOA costs for parking garage security and maintenance. Existing parking rates are far below the market rate now. State employees pay $10 a month for parking lots and $15 a month for parking decks. Each option would go up by $5 to $15 and $20 a month, respectively. The last rate increase was $19.79. State employees who park in the state-owned parking deck under the NC Museum of History in downtown Raleigh will lose parking during the museum's renovations. The parking lot and decks have suffered from lack of investment in necessary infrastructure and safety upgrades, including required elevator maintenance, proper signage, proper painting, security camera installation, and other items, according to DOA. Farley, the labor commissioner, asked that the two cost increases and reserve parking change be voted on separately by the Council of State. He voted against the increase in monthly parking for state employees. Everyone else has voted in favor. It's going to be charging them more for that privilege, and they may even be moving to a deck further away. So it would be more expensive, less convenient, and unreserved. And so I can go along with the unreserved, but I'm concerned about raising fees, especially on state employees right now. It's tough for everybody, and so I'm not comfortable adding another fee to state employees at the moment, Farley said. State employees have fewer places to park while the former Department of Administration site is under construction and will lose more spots because of the North Carolina Museum of History's renovations. That equals about 1,100 state employee parking spaces, which is 15% of total capacity. Not all state workers in reserve spots come to work Monday through Friday, so unreserved parking fees freeze up spaces at a time when there are fewer places to park. The Department of Administration building was demolished this past year, including its surface parking lot. In its place will be North Carolina Education Campus, which is a project overseen by the General Assembly. A DOA parking audit found that the majority of state employees' parking spaces are vacant on any given day, primarily driven by hybrid work schedules. Edwards say that since they began the audit in September, there hasn't been a single day when parking areas were at 50% capacity. Farley called the change to unreserved parking group punishment, taking away reserved spots for those who do come to the office because of so many people who don't come to the office. He voted for it, however, citing the need given that the state is losing parking spaces during construction. I have 290 vacancies right now, so if this doesn't work out, I'll be back, Troxler said. He's also like to see a system that identifies available parking spaces in DEX so people won't spend time running around and around trying to find a space. He also wanted assurance that the money will actually fund safety upgrades, but Troxler and State Auditor Dave Boylick want to assess five changes and review them later. Boylick said he would like to come back before the State of Council to show that it was the right thing to do. The new parking plan will assign employees to see a specific lot or garage, but not a space. If the lot is full, they will be able to park in a visitor lot for free that day. However, some high-ranking employees will keep the reserve spaces. The plan includes limited exceptions for agency principals retaining their assigned spaces. The Department of Administration is also going to open more state-run parking lots and decks to the public at night and on weekends, but charge for the parking. The pricing will be decided by the secretary of the agency. There will be added costs to install parking-free fee machines in state employee-only lots. Currently, visitors' lots owned by the state charge the public during the business day until about 6, and state employee-only lots are not open to visitors at all.
We have time, just a few minutes, to do some events and birthdays for this day, May 7th. On this day, in 1901, Gary Cooper, American actor, was born. In 1892, Joseph Broz Tito, president of Yugoslavia, was born. In 1840, Tchaikovsky, the Russian composer, was born. And going way back, in 1711, Scottish philosopher David Hume was born. I should have gotten some more recent birthdays in that list, but we take what we get. You have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. This broadcast is generously supported by the Orchid Group at Morgan Stanley, and we thank you, Orchid Group, for your contribution. The content of this program is readily available as a podcast after this broadcast by visiting our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Have a happy day, but remember, we're back in a couple minutes.